brought to you by Burr and Foreman, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth Gordon and Lee Cantor.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Elizabeth Gordon. It is Tuesday, March 12th, 2013, and I'm here in our downtown studio location. Dana Barrett is our producer today. How's it going, Dana?
Pretty good, thank you.
And we have a fantastic show lined up for you. Two great guests in the studio with me. Today's show is going to be about immigration reform and how it will affect businesses in Georgia and the Southeast. Anton Mertens is here with Burr & Foreman. Anton is the head of the business immigration practice at Burr & Foreman, and also a member of the Labor and Employment Practice Group. Welcome, Anton.
Good morning, Elizabeth. Thank you.
Scott Williams is also with us today. Scott is, are you president of or founder of the Stonehaven?
Actually, both. I'm the president and founder.
There you go. I got it. And the Stonehaven Group, HR, is an international human capital support and advisory firm. Started in 2001. You serve small and mid-cap companies with their human resources needs.
That's correct. Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad to have both of you. Let's take a minute and just get to know our guests before we dive into the topic at hand. So, Anton, as I said, your background is in immigration. You help businesses with issues like professional visas, labor certifications, immigration. What are some of the challenges that clients come to you for assistance and advisory on?
Mainly, Elizabeth, it's the inefficiency of the immigration system. Immigration is broken. It's well known. The only good thing I can point to right now is that there is a lot of talk about immigration reform. And hopefully that comes to pass. I mean, talk is cheap, especially in Washington. But hopefully we'll see some proposals and some enactment of laws that will help companies bring in folks quicker, more efficiently, do away with some of the backlogs for some of these high-tech workers, especially from China or India. It could be 10, 20 years before you get a green card, and that's just not, you know, that's just not a way to do business.
Absolutely. Scott, as you're dealing with companies that are growing their team, they need quick solutions to their HR issues.
Absolutely, because there are so many compliance aspects to the federal government, state government, and even local governments. A lot of small to mid-cap owners do not know that they're in violation of any of the employment regulations until, sadly, they get a notice from an attorney saying, we are suing you. You know, and our job is to get in there, be proactive, let them know what's coming down the pipeline before they have any issues so they can resolve the issues and continue on their core function of their business.
So let's talk about immigration reform. How is it going to impact, help or hurt, the average employer?
Well, there are lots of components of immigration reform. One, of course, is enforcement. Make sure that employers do not hire undocumented workers or folks that are not authorized to work in the U.S. Another component is border security. Make sure that the border is secure before we actually reform or lead a path to citizenship to some of these folks that are here illegally or without documents. And then thirdly, which I'm most excited about, is let's make immigration a little easier, a little more customer friendly. And I'm talking about legal immigration for high-skilled workers. The only flaw I see right now in the proposal is there is really no help for folks that are in lower skilled jobs, you know, brick masons, electricians,
exactly.
Plumbers,
yep.
And they've kind of been left out of this debate.
And what's the importance of addressing that particular group?
Well, it's critical, Elizabeth, because most of the business owners in the area that we support are not dealing with the high-end professionals. They're dealing with the skilled laborers. One of the saddest things I heard last year was when the Georgia's legislators were saying, we got to get rid of the undocumented workers. that scared away a lot of the labor that several of our clients needed in order to harvest their crops. Several millions of dollars just rotted in the ground as a result of not having the labor. This reform, as it relates to our clients, they don't really care so much because it's just another regulation that they have to worry about. What they want is a solution to help them grow their business so that they know that when they're out there, you know, building cabinets, you know, working on widgets, pulling crops out, whatever, they're not going to have a visit from some federal agency shutting them down. For me and for our clients, we need something that is just simple. Anton was absolutely correct in what he said. It's got to be user-friendly, and that's something that I believe government has forgotten. They love putting these huge volumes of materials together, and for the common guy, you know, he just goes, whatever. I don't get it, and then that's when they get into trouble.
I've got a business to run, and I need a user-friendly way to
And Scott, guess what? We got a new I-9 form.
Woo!
Came out Friday.
Yeah,
so
tell us about
ready.
That.
Yeah.
You know, typically with immigration, things move a little slow. You know, the last time we had to wait more than 10 years on a new I-9 form, we finally, you know, after that, we had two or three different iterations. We now have a two-page I-9 form, yep. 6 pages of instructions. So it's now yep. it's now a 9-page package, actually, with another page of documents you can accept. And you could you have to start using them now. But
exactly.
you have yep. about 30 days, actually, until May 7th, 60 days to come in compliance, and then you got to use a new form. So get ready. I mean, just and retrain your folks.
Once again, there's more work that the small business guy has to do, or else he brings on a firm like us. You know, we take care of that. But that's just reams and reams of paper. And, you know.
Now, what is it that employers need to know about hiring foreign workers?
Well, when you hire a worker, foreign or not, of course, you have to check their employment eligibility. Of course, if they're U.S. citizens or have a green card, it's fairly simple. You fill out the I-9 form. Now, if you want to hire someone who's either not in the U.S. or who is in a status that does not allow them to work, you would have to sponsor them. You have to petition for them with the Immigration Service typically to get them the right status so they could work for you. And it's very specific. It's employment specific. It's employer specific. It's location specific many times. And you have to fill out paperwork. You have to basically state your case. You send it to a service center of the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, and it sits there. Someone looks at it, adjudicates it. Sometimes it takes months, sometimes 3, 4, 5, 6 months, depending on the time of year. And then when that person gets the okay, the green light, then they can go on your payroll. They can work for you. If they're not in the U.S., they'll have to go to a consulate in the U.S., I mean in their home country to pick up a visa so they can come in with it. You have to keep up with that. You have to keep up with the expiration date of their visa, expiration date of their status. If they change jobs or change locations, something has to be done. So it's pretty complicated to remain in compliance.
Now, can I jump in and ask a question? Because that doesn't help anybody that got here without documentation, right? I mean, that's only
right.
for people who already got here in some legitimate way but just couldn't work.
Correct.
Correct. Like students, for instance, a lot of students go to school, let's say, you know, a kid at Georgia Tech, a degree in engineering, a company wants to hire her or him, and they have to then do petition with immigration to get that right visa.
Right.
And that visa may or may not be available. For instance, the H-1B visa, we're about to hit the H-1B crisis.
Right.
That, by the way, it's a specialty occupation visa. It's at a minimum requires a bachelor's degree for the job. You have to have the bachelor's degree or a foreign degree equivalent. And there are only 65,000 available in the U.S. for the fiscal year. Now, you could file 6 months before you need it. Fiscal year starts October 1, so you file April 1. Last year, we ran out in June, even before the fiscal year started. So
wow.
This year, the idea is people are saying, we'll run out the first week, and then there'll
right.
be a lottery.
Right.
Imagine that. How can you do business if you're counting on a lottery to get a visa?
Can you imagine putting your name into a hat and that's what your livelihood depends on?
Wow.
Yeah, it's just there's got to be a better way to do it.
If I could just step back for a moment, I think, Elizabeth, you said, what about the employer? What can the employer do? A general rule of thumb is within 3 days of employment, they have to go through E-Verify. E-Verify looks at the Social Security numbers and makes sure that they are legally able to work in the United States. They also have to be able to show documentation on the I-9, you know, government issued identity. Okay. And what we find time and time again, when immigration issues do come up, the I-9 is not being properly filled out. Anton was saying, we got another one. Yeah, we know we got another one. And here we go again. You know, we have to make sure that we have people in the workplace understanding how to fill out those I-9s, because as government entities come in, ignorance is no longer an excuse, and it's unfortunately getting very expensive. So the rule of thumb, again, is to make sure when someone comes on board that they are run through the E-Verify so that you get a certificate that says, yes, they are able to be hired. That protects the employer. Now, the question comes up, well, what if it comes back suspicious or no record? You know, maybe you can touch on this.
And talk about E-Verify. I'm glad you mentioned that, Scott, because E-Verify is not mandatory in some places. Now, it is mandatory in Georgia if you have more than 50 employees,
right.
I think, or 100 employees right. at this point. And then it'll phase into 11 or more employees come July 1st.
Correct.
Alabama, E-Verify is mandatory. You know, there are a bunch of states.
I just think it's good to do it regardless.
Right. And some people do it just as a matter of course, because it's run through the Social Security Administration database, and you protect yourself a little bit at least. The issue with E-Verify, of course, it's not mandatory yet everywhere, but I believe as part of this immigration reform, we'll have a mandatory verification system,
right.
Whether it's E-Verify or something else, it's coming, and I'm telling my clients that
it's a cheap insurance policy, you know,
to a certain extent. Although it's funny, I was with a client on an ICE audit, and they asked, it was a janitorial service, and they asked, well, you know, do you do E-Verify? And they started doing E-Verify about 2008, and so they did, and that was a mitigating factor in some of the fines that were levied against them when they found that some of these folks were really not authorized to work in the U.S.
So, Scott, how can an employer reduce their risk of ICE coming to their location?
Well, obviously not hire undocumented workers is
start
a good
there.
Start. Making sure that your I-9s are filled out properly. There is 9 out of 10 times before ICE comes into any workplace, there is some type of questionnaire that's sent out. I believe the actual term is a notice of...
I think it's a notice of inspection.
Of inspection. Thank you. I drew a blank there for a moment. That has to be filled out properly, because the folks that are going to determine if they take the next step or not will be reading that. That is a very big point in making sure that you are not visited. Making sure that your I-9s are separate from personnel files in case you are visited. So just very simple things can prevent the visit from the authorities.
And sometimes you're a targeted industry, like agriculture, hospitality, you know, the restaurant business, construction.
Light industry.
Right, exactly.
Absolutely.
And they will target you. Or if there's a complaint made, if for some reason there's a complaint made and they follow up on it, obviously you have to have a certain size to be on the radar screen for ICE. But, you know, I get calls every day about, well, I'm paying my maid and I'm not sure that, you know, she's legal. She's going to Brazil every other week or every other year. You know, am I going to get in trouble? Probably not. I mean, it's not a good idea, but, you know, there's so many of them doing it.
Right. I mean, just a couple months ago, there was the case of a contractor that was using undocumented workers. They were building a school. Did the employers turn them in? I'm sorry. Did the employees turn them in? No, because they were making money. Did the employer? Oh, no. But the competition did, because they were being undercut by this moron by hiring these undocumented workers. And you can't conduct business like that. And if I can say one thing, if you're going to hire undocumented workers, be prepared. You will get caught. I put money down every single time, all day long. You will get caught. Someone's going to turn you in. The best thing to do, and the vast majority of employers say, what do I need to stay in compliance? They fill out the I-9s. They hire legal workers. Everything's fine.
And most of the time, people really want to comply. and then you got these silly paperwork violations where you didn't cross all the T's or dotted all the I's, but you know, it is what it is.
Right. So reforming the immigration system so that there is a more clear pathway. And actually, I wanted to ask you, is pathway to citizenship part of the solution as we look at what's to come with immigration reform?
I believe it is. The last immigration riff we had, there was more of an amnesty type of program. Show up, in you are. Okay, you're a citizen. Congratulations. My personal opinion is that the checkoff list that is coming down, kind of work to citizenship, allows the one side that says, we don't want to just give them a free ride. Okay, they have to work for it. On the other side, there's folks that said, well, we need a way to get in. Well, there's the way to get in. So the path to citizenship, I think, is a very good idea. I'd love to be able to see it done by the end of the year. I don't know if the boys and girls up in D.C. can come together and actually make that happen, but I'd love to see it happen.
And it's funny, and Scott's talking about the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, where President Reagan really provided amnesty, and that was also responsible for the I-9 form. The interesting fact about that is about 2.9 million people got green cards, but less than 50%, I think it's about 40% of them, became citizens. So even though there's a pathway to citizenship, not everybody avails themselves of it for whatever reason. Either they don't want to become citizens, or it's too expensive. I mean, it's the filing fee is $680. You got to pay taxes for 5 years. Make sure you have your taxes paid. You have a background check. Make sure you have no criminal record. You have to take a test. Some people are scared of that. You know, maybe English is not so good anymore for them. It's a difficult language to master. So there are still impediments to that citizenship.
Makes sense. Now, talking about visas, non-immigrant and immigrant visa categories. Did those, I mean, it's a quota system, and you kind of were referencing this earlier, Anton. Does the numbers still make sense given the current global dynamic of our economy?
That's a great question, Elizabeth. No, they don't make sense. This, of course, the Immigration Nationality Act was 1952. Some of the quotas were put into place. The H-1B quota was 1990. You know, we have 300 million people in the U.S. now. It doesn't make sense anymore in that we only have 140,000 green cards based on employment per fiscal year. And that's the employee and their family. So a family of five where mom is a CPA and gets a green card that way, you know, the other four also get a green card. And it comes out of that quota. That's why there are huge backlogs for countries from like India and China. And by the way, there's also a per-country limit that's set, and that they're talking about doing away with that as well. So there are way too few cards available, green cards available, based on employment. Now, if you're marrying a U.S. citizen, it's automatic. You could sponsor your brother or sister as a U.S. citizen, but the backlog there is about 13 years. It doesn't make sense either. So you kind of have to revamp the numbers, look at the numbers as well. You know, do you go to a system like Canada, which is a point system where you say, well, okay, you're between 30 and 40, you get so many points. You have a bachelor's degree, you get so many points. You have a master's, you get more points. You speak Spanish, you get more points. You have a job offer, whatever. You're healthy, you get 75 points, here's your green card. Or attach a green card to a diploma. If somebody comes here from a foreign country, gets a bachelor's or master's or PhD, you want them to stay here and not have to wait 10 or 15 years to be able to stay here legally.
You know, I would agree with you, Anton, but I'd also stress the fact that we have a very high population of educated people here. Okay. What we do not have, and I see this time and time again, is a strong population of skilled tradesmen. So the numbers may be low, but I think the true issue is providing those visas to those skilled laborers that are coming in. Okay. Right now, we do not have enough tech schools that are putting out the welders. There's not enough mechanical schools putting out lathe operators. That is the backbone of what America is becoming, and we just do not have that. And it's a catch-22. As a manufacturer of specialized parts, I need to find people that can turn those lathes, that have the fine details. Am I going to put a PhD candidate on that? No. I'm going to put someone who has the skill, and they're going to Gwinnett Technical College, and they're being told, we don't have enough people to put out. So I hear what you're saying, that the numbers are low, but I truly believe where we are going to hurt ourselves in the long term is not allowing skilled labor to come in, earn wages, pay their taxes, and be citizens of the United States.
That's a good point, Scott. It's a highly political issue, of course. I mean, the unions get involved in that. Oh, gosh, the economy's poor, you know, taking jobs away from Americans. I think we'll have a wake-up call when the housing industry gets going again and we can't find people
Huge.
To build houses.
I mean, absolutely.
It's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And is it just skilled laborers? Because aren't there just laborers in general that, I mean, that are willing to, I mean, not to be like crass, but are willing to work for less, that are all of a sudden going to go away, and then people aren't going to be able to do the home fix-it projects and whatever because they're not, those people aren't around to do the work?
Well, most of my clients that are in manufacturing have a hard time finding, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, big clients who are looking for folks like, you know, welders or,
right.
or engineers that are working on machinery, and they can't find enough of them. They
but
can't,
in like US Florida world. Or, you know, isn't there, I know there's, you know, all the orange groves and the, you know, fruit pickers and people like that too. I mean, there's a whole other ball of wax
yeah,
here that
agricultural
you know,
right.
in Atlanta
right.
we don't deal with.
But think about this. Will they find people to pick the oranges? Will they find the people to get the lettuce? Will they find people to move the bricks around? Absolutely. But you know what? They're going to have to raise their rates in order to get those people.
That's my point.
And we have consumers saying, oh, no. I don't want to pay more. I
right.
want to pay less.
Right.
And exactly.
So,
yes.
yeah, they can find people to pick the oranges, but then all of a sudden orange juice is going to cost, you know, $6 a half gallon.
Exactly.
And everyone's going to get all up in arms.
Again, back to my point. The backbone of the U.S. economy falls on the guy that is pushing the broom across
yeah.
the floor.
Okay.
The
yeah.
PhD guy, the engineer guy, they are there.
Yeah.
You know? But the gentleman that is, the lady or gentleman that is out there, you know, doing the basic work, very, very much in need and not there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the current state of the law, that's right. There are a couple of categories that come to mind. The H-2A, which is a agricultural, and there's our H-2B, which is non-professional temporary workers.
Right.
But you first got to go through the Department of Labor to test the market and say, I can't find U.S. workers. Well, that costs money. That takes time. Now with sequester, the Department of Labor is going to probably slow down that process.
Right.
And then you got to go to the Immigration Service and say, okay, the position's been certified. I can hire someone. Now, you know, let me file the paperwork, pay that money, get that done. And then before you know it, the season's over.
Right.
It's just not
right.
user-friendly. And it just takes too long, and it's just
and aren't,
antiquated.
Right. Aren't we talking somewhere in the range of about $600 to $800 per person?
Yes, yes, absolutely, at the minimum. Yeah.
Okay, multiply that by 100. That would put most small business, mid-sized businesses out of business.
Yep,
a cost like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we're talking about Washington and the inefficiency there. What do you all think about? Should states be in the business of passing immigration laws? Should this move down to a state level?
Don't think so. You know, the issue with that is it started in Arizona, of course, and Arizona got a big black eye on that. Then Georgia followed suit, and then South Carolina said, well, hey, you know, Georgia, look, they're very unfriendly to immigrants. Why don't you come to South Carolina and bring your business here? Alabama didn't listen, obviously, and did
right.
went the same path. And,
right.
and a couple of high-level executives got caught without their driver's license, and suddenly it makes national news. It's
right.
kind of crazy. I think one of the proposals coming out of the White House would do away with any state laws. You know, don't legislate immigration. It's a federal issue. It should remain a federal issue. On the other hand, in an article I wrote last year, I kind of looked at various options. What about, you know, immigration numbers set by the states? If Georgia needs so many of this type of immigrant, maybe they could trade with Oklahoma, who wouldn't need that kind of immigrant or kind of skill set. Of course, again, just imagine the administrative nightmare. It's terrible now at the federal level. At the state level, it would probably get bogged down.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I would say it needs to stay more at the federal level, and I am sure that there is somebody out there going, oh, that boy needs to be spoken to.
Yeah, it's just, and now, and by the way, George is trying to expand some on House Bill 87. There is House Bill 125 coming up, and House passed it. It's just crazy. I mean, it expands some of the definitions and makes it even
right.
more restrictive, and there's just really no reason for that at this
right.
point.
So is there a time frame for the passage of immigration reform? What can we look forward to, and when? When should employers expect to be
My crystal ball is broken. How about you,
Scott? Right.
It's cloudy.
It's cloudy. I seriously would hope and anticipate that sometime by the end of this year, we would have the debate and we would have a vote on making that into law. I would really like that to happen. Is that reality? I'm not sure, but I would think that the way things are going right now, especially with immigration reform kind of at the forefront of the overall spectrum of various legislation that's out there, I think there's going to be a drive to make it happen.
And I think, I mean, there's talk about doing it much earlier. There's been some, you know, the Gang of Eight, which is kind of a misnomer, you know, a gang. It's like, you know, some thugs. No, it's four Republican senators and four Democratic senators who put together a framework for immigration reform, and they want something done by sometime this month. You know, so at least some debate on it. You know, I'm kind of with Scott. It's probably not going to happen for a while, but because you got other issues, you got security is always an issue, but you got the economy. I mean, you got the fiscal cliff. We just got through with that. Now sequester, you know, the deadline's looming at the end of this month. You know,
gun control.
Yeah, it's going to take a back seat, I'm afraid, again, once again.
However, the talk immigration reform will have economic ramifications.
Oh, absolutely.
You guys are saying.
Absolutely.
It should be done right. It should bring some money in as well. I mean, which, of course, is good and bad. If it's going to cost too much for that pathway to citizenship, people are going to say, well, I'll just forego that and just stay in the shadows. Although what's going to happen is staying in the shadows is going to be more expensive if you get caught.
Correct. And from the very beginning, I believe Anton and I agree. The vast majority of business owners want to do the right thing. The folks that just say, I'll just hire a bunch of undocumented workers, that's very small percentage. I really believe that if this is put into a user-friendly format, this will have multipliers, I think is a better word, by way of helping business.
We're not the only ones, by the way. Europe has, you know, tremendous immigration problems as well. You know, France, Germany, the UK, even Belgium. I mean, it's just, they don't know how to deal with it. And they then go back to if you're high skilled, high tech, you know, come on in.
Sure.
But then, as Scott said, what about who's going to take care of the yard of the high skilled person or the, you know, who's going to build their house?
Right. It's an essential part of keeping that, a free-flowing labor force alive. But you need a system that's going to work for everyone. So we're now at the portion of the show where we're going to talk about results that matter. So let's talk about the results that you both see as being pivotal in the coming reforms and what matters most to your clients. Scott, let's start with you.
Well, first of all, I think the most critical thing is to have some type of clear, concise message sent out by the federal government to the mid-cap, small-cap business owner so that they can take the appropriate steps to make sure that they are in compliance. That's got to be done. As I said, I would really like it done by the end of the year. You know, if it's done sooner, excellent. Our clients right now are going, what's going on? I don't know what I'm supposed to do, what I'm not supposed to do. And just having that doubt distracts them from doing their core business. Okay. The other thing that needs to be done is there has to be clear understanding of what those violations are. Okay. If you have a sentence or two off on your I-9s, that's not a reason to have a raid. You know, that should be a phone call,
right?
And it's resolved. You know,
what are the important rules?
Exactly. Within that body of the or that structure of the law, there needs to be clear and understandable. This is correct. This is not correct. And I'm going to refer to Anton. But if my understanding is, ICE is not going for fines so much as they are going for criminal prosecution. If that's what they want, that's fine. But there has to be a clear understanding of what that will be. Okay. If you are one of that small minority that decides to go out and hire undocumented workers, you will get this, this, and this. Negotiation is always there, but you know, it's got to be a very clear signal again. So I want to see at the end of the year some legislation that's passed that is clear and concise so that we can go back to our clients and our clients can go to some website and go, I understand.
Clarity on that, that is what I'm hearing is most important.
It's critical.
For the employer.
Absolutely.
Now, Scott, you're also asked to speak and do interviews and talks because you're a real thought leader on a lot of these types of issues and topics. Let's go ahead and give your website address out as well so people know how to get in touch with you.
Sure. It is www.tsg-hr.com. If you want to call us and just talk to us, our office number is 678-417-0767. And we also are starting up a newsletter, which I'd like to let everyone know about. It's going to be focusing on critical topics for primarily those employers that have 600 employees or less. Right now, we have a 5-part series that's ready to go on the Affordable Care Act. Okay, that's a major, what's that all about? If you are interested in subscribing to that newsletter, we can't say, hey, you want to be part of it. You have to come to our email, which is inquiries@tsg-hr.com. Let us know you'd like to be on the subscription, and we'll be happy to put you on that list and keep you informed.
Excellent. A lot of great information about labor and employment law and all things that employers need to be aware of. A lot of changes to be abreast of this year.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot happening, and that's a good thing for Anton and I because we love educating people, but for the business owner, it keeps them up at night.
And Anton, from your perspective, as a resource to clients, what are the results that you're hearing really are most important to them and what you're able to assist them with?
Well, I think most people want to see a common sense approach. Now, as immigration lawyers, if we say, well, we need immigration reform, it's self-serving. You know, it means more work for us. So we want our clients to go out, you know, people that Scott's in touch with, Scott, you know, himself, you know, talk to your congresspeople, your senators, your elected officials and say, listen, you know, status quo is not acceptable anymore. You know, you can't push this off on the next generation. This has got to happen now. We got, you know, what's enough? 11 million, you know, 20, you need 20 million illegals. It's just crazy. So we want to see some real action on immigration. That's, you know, both certainly on the legal side, and that's what I'm interested in, is make the process smoother, make it easier, make it more customer friendly, make it clearer, I guess. But then also, let's deal with this, you know, whatever you want to call it, pathway to citizenship. You know, let's come up with an approach that will help. It doesn't help to say, well, yeah, they got to stand in line, but behind everybody else. Well, I just mentioned earlier that for someone legally here, legally trying to get a green card, if they're from India and they have a bachelor's degree, it may take them 20 years. So you're going to put everybody behind that line? That's not much of an incentive, is it? Unless they can have some kind of temporary status and at least feel that they're, you know, protected from deportation, or from fines or being put in jail. So we want to see something that helps the business community. I mean, certainly we want our clients to have an easier time bringing in the people that they need, whether they are here in the U.S. or whether they're outside of the U.S., but then also use some of the money from these scholarship fees and fines, perhaps, to educate U.S. students. I mean, there's all this, you know, what about STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, math.
Right. Good point. Very good
point. We need kids here in the U.S., to catch the train, basically, and say, listen, let's catch up with the rest of the world. That way, we won't have to go outside of the U.S. to hire these technical, highly skilled people. They're here, right here, at Georgia Tech, at MIT, at Stanford. And that would be the greatest result of this immigration reform, where we realize, hey, wait a minute, you know, we could help ourselves. If the kids, you know, if we get our kids on the bandwagon, and mainly the parents, I guess, on the bandwagon.
Right. Don't forget the parents. They're important.
So a lot of opportunity to make some smart decisions that are going to have real ramifications.
Absolutely.
For generations to come.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, this is a pivotal time in the history of the United States. a lot of good things can happen or a lot of things that are going to cost us dearly going forward if it's not taken care of. Because when you're dealing with people, again, people are what makes this country, you know, thrive. And that's just a resource that you got to be careful with.
Yeah, just imagine you want to look 20 years from now and look at China and say, gosh, this is what the U.S. could have been, but for immigration. You know, look at us. You know, we're just a crumbling society of old folks. And, you know, it's just so we got to be proactive. You know, youth is our real power.
It's our future.
And people are still looking at the U.S. as the greatest country in the world. And and certainly I came here from Belgium, you know, back in the 70s and just fell in love with the place and just – the way that you could express yourself, you know, there's anything works, anything goes, people won't knock you down. And that's something that the U.S. is known for. But also at the same time, it's been a melting pot of different populations and different cultural groups, which I believe makes us great. So let's at least, you know, expand that melting pot and maybe, you know, have it a little more orderly rather than the melting salsa, I guess.
The chaos,
right?
Professional chaos.
Well, business likes clarity. So as employers are working at, you know, navigating some of the ambiguity here over the coming months through the year and getting more clarity around what are the reforms going to look like and how can they best use them to their advantage, they're going to reach out to experts for advice.
Yes.
What advice kind of generally would you give, you know, business owners in terms of what's to come this year and what they need to be in the loop and aware of?
Well, certainly, you know, follow the media. I mean, follow the debate. It's going to affect you as a business, whether you're small, medium size, or large. Certainly, small and medium size would be more affected because, you know, the U.S. is built on small business. And maybe we should have some visa for entrepreneurs, people who come here, not invest $1 million necessarily like some of the visa programs, but maybe $100,000 or $250,000. And put a couple of people to work, you know, infuse that cash, infuse that work ethic that, you know, we're losing a little bit. You know, certainly my clients, I would tell them, you know, certainly keep up with it. We'll keep up with it for you. We'll send you client alerts. We'll tell you when a new I-9 form comes out. We'll tell you when there's immigration reform that helps you or hurts you. Certainly there, you know, the solution is not perhaps a solution for everyone. It doesn't work for everyone, but perhaps we can get a lot of this reform passed that we can look back 10 years from now and say, gosh, I'm glad we did that. But maybe we shouldn't talk about citizenship now. We should talk about a pathway to legal status. And then 10 years from now, I should say, okay, you know, you've all been legal for 10 years now. It's time for citizenship. You know, what will you do? Of course, as you know, it's a highly political issue because people say, well, you know, if you bring the foreign voters in and you allow them to vote, become citizens, they'll vote Democratic. We'll lose our, you know, whatever, our edge or they'll have more of an edge. You know, just we need to put partisanship aside and politics aside and say what's in the best interest for this country? You know, what keeps us moving forward? What keeps us remain the great power and competitive with the rest of the world?
Right. I could not agree with you more. We have to come to terms with what we need to do, regardless of your political, you know, party. But I'd like to step back just a little bit because your question was, what do businesses need to look at going forward? Immigration is going to be important. Pay attention to the media, yes. But also, businesses have to understand that the Department of Labor is staffing up. They're also going to be looking at things such as compensation. They're going to be looking at things such as overtime. You know, are people being paid properly? Immigration is part of a very large pie that is going on out there. And, well, the Department of Labor has not cut any of their staff. Okay.
Even sequester?
No, that sequester hasn't touched them. I don't think it will, you know. So the small business person has to know what the employment landscape is. They have to know where those landmines are, and they have to act on those in a proactive manner so that they don't get hurt. The average litigation that we found out costs the small business to mid-sized business about $95,000. Okay, that's a lot of money. And one of the things I always say when I start any type of workshop is, how much have you budgeted to lose this year? People look at me all crazy like, what do you mean? you know, because they're not thinking about, well, if I have an employee that's working 45 hours, they need to be paid time and a half for 5 hours. You know, they think, oh, I'll just give them straight time. That's what we all do. No, that can cost you dearly. So immigration is critical, but the small business person listening to this needs to understand there's many different aspects out there that they need to be aware of and accountable for.
Excellent. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you both for weighing in on such an important issue. We've been talking about immigration reform and how it will affect businesses in Georgia and the Southeast. I want to thank my guests once again, Anton Mertens with Burr and Foreman and Scott Williams, the Stonehaven Group HR. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Burr and Foreman's Results Matter Radio. I am Elizabeth Gordon, and we will talk to you next week.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.